The Cambridge Marketing Podcast with Kiran Kapoor, brought to you by Cambridge Marketing College. See their range of courses and apprenticeships at marketingcollege.com.
Hello and welcome. This week we are talking about internal communications and how to make them exciting. And my guest is Alan Anstead, College Fellow. Alan, welcome. Let's start with a nice definition. So what do we mean by internal communications?
Thank you, Kiran. Yeah, internal communications, I would define it as the way an organisation interacts with its people. And by its people, that can be employees, interns, volunteers, and how they interact with it, the organisation. So internal communication is how a company communicates with its staff, and internal communications are the tactics and channels.
Okay, so give me some example of some channels.
Yeah, so there could be a whole range of different channels. Some are what we call lean media. They're fast, quick, get that message across. All staff emails, a newsletter. Some are rich media, more interaction there, more of a two-way communication. Things like Yammer or town hall meetings. When one's deciding which channels to use, one thinks of, well, what is internal communication actually doing? What's its purpose? And first I want to say, I know it's a negative to have around what it's not doing, but first of all, I don't believe that internal communication's purpose is to tell people what to do. That's not what good, effective internal communication is all about. It's to create a shared understanding and meaning. And when that happens, employees, the team, interns, everyone can work together effectively towards the organization's goals. And then I think there's three broad functions of internal communication: to inform staff, to influence staff, and to involve staff. And there may be an internal communication team within the organisation, or one person with responsibility for internal communications. And that team may be part of the broader public relations communications function, or be part of human resources.
Okay, so I think, you know, the idea of informing staff is probably what most of us would think of internal communications, that somebody sits there and decides staff need to know this. Influencing staff, what sort of things would we be influencing them about?
Yeah, that could be, if we think over the last 2 years, might be influencing staff to take tests for COVID if they're feeling unwell, or to make sure that they're social distancing if they've come into the office, or things like that. It could be influencing staff to work in a particular way, to think about diversity, to think about inclusion of all colleagues. There may be many different things that an organisation would want to influence staff about.
And could it be the way that we want staff to think, or the way we're looking for staff to behave? Is that the sort of thing we're thinking about with influence?
Yeah, you know, the think, feel, do works quite well, I think, in terms of something that could be applied to internal communications, and particularly about influencing staff.
That's interesting. I don't actually know the think, feel, do. Is that a model?
It's a marketing model, Kiran.
Oops.
It's not even a PR one. I borrowed it.
So is it as logical as it sounds? That you get people to think
exactly
in a way that helps them to feel? Is that right?
Yes, and then they will do. So need to think first about something, and then they'll feel, oh, yes, I really should do that. And then they actually do it as a progression.
So the other thing you said was, you said with internal communications, you said inform, influence and involve. So can we look at the involve?
Yeah, involving staff is getting their opinions, getting their viewpoints, making them feel part of the organisation because they're contributing to it, and involving staff maybe through discussion groups, could be through a survey. There are many different tools one could use to involve staff. It's sometimes called employee engagement as well as the buzzword.
You entitled this talk as Skipping the Skip. So I am guessing that means that not everybody is excited by internal communications and absorbs it from beginning to end. Would that be a fair assumption?
Yeah, I don't think it's necessary because it's internal communications. It's just the sheer overload, perhaps, of information noise that's out there, that you know, internal communications is just as susceptible to that as a piece of external communication.
So when we're crafting internal communications, we need to be thinking about the fact that, yes, there's a lot of noise, there's a lot of other things competing for information. And I think we've all had newsletters that have come through from the employer where you go, I'll read that later. And later turns out to be the next month when the next one arrives. So how do we get over that?
Yeah, well, let's look at that scenario just for a minute. A newsletter. So the person who's spent perhaps a day crafting a newsletter for an organisation, they've got texts from the chief executive officer to put into it about the company's performance and how it's doing. They may be a day late, but they're quite pleased with the work they've done. It goes out on the Tuesday rather than the Monday, and they send it out. They're quite pleased. End of the week, they look at the analytics, and the analytics show that only 20% of staff opened it, and very few people clicked on the links within it that would take them to more detailed information about the company's performance. You know, that's something that happens. It's quite common. And that is the skip. The skip is people just either not reading it or skim reading it and not taking in very much at all of the information that's there. And that's what I wanted really to talk through today about, how to reduce that skip.
Okay, yes, because I think we've all been in a situation where you've agonised over the way you phrased a sentence or something to really cover it, and only to realise that actually the recipient didn't really read it, either didn't take it in the way you wanted them to or didn't read it at all. Okay, so what do we do? Give me some examples, please.
Yeah, I just described, you know, not the fault of the internal communicator, but just something that happens. And perhaps I could describe and give an example of how it works really well. So this is the scenario. At precisely the same time, every second Thursday, 132,000 employees of GSK, the big pharmaceutical firm, receive the latest edition of the company's newsletter. It's called Your GSK News. And Your GSK News was an innovation that replaced lots of different communications. We were talking earlier about the different tools one could use. Well, they reduced those to having Your GSK News as the main internal communication tool. And it's tailored to every employee, depending on their language, depending on their work area, and a number of things. So they would only get the material in their Your GSK News that's relevant to them. And you know, it's arriving consistently at the same time every week, whereas, you know, rather than coming at any time into the inbox, so people expect it. And from that, GSK News has a very high opening rate. I think it was in the 80s and 90s opening rate when we just compared on the example where it wasn't working so well, of an opening rate of 20% or something. Mm-hmm. So it gives an example. It can be done. And that's for a large firm with 132,000 employees, which you can downscale that to a smaller business or other sort of organization in terms, but there's some principles there that makes your GSK News work as an effective newsletter.
Okay, so I noticed you said that it landed consistently, whereas in your earlier example, you talked about the newsletter perhaps going out one day late because, as often happens, it got held up or something. So is consistency one of the messages here?
Definitely. And you know, I would say always send the newsletter at the same time. Journalists have what journalists regard as one of their greatest sins is to miss a deadline. And one can apply that, I think, to internal communications. Don't miss deadlines. It sort of sends a feeling to those who receive that newsletter that it's not important. Whereas when it comes out at a particular time, every week or every 2 weeks or every month, people expecting it as consistent. They know it's from the content, which we can also talk about in a minute. They know it is important. It's going to be relevant to them and their work.
Okay, so consistency is one thing. The other thing you said in the GSK example was that it was tailored and relevant. So I'm guessing that that's also very important.
Yeah, and I think one would start there by being quite strategic and in thinking, well, what's the purpose of that particular channel or newsletter? In the same way that one really should look at the purpose for every internal communications channel, as well as then after thinking about the purpose, and you know, even if you take it broadly, it's to inform about this or to influence or to involve, mm-hmm. and then thinking about, well, who is it to? In the GSK example, then that was split up. So it was tailored newsletters for different types of employees. For many organisations, the audience is going to be employees. So having a strategy there, a simple strategy about the purpose. Following on from that, and this, I think, really helps to show it's important for the organisation, is to think about branding. The logo, the font, for that piece of internal communications, in fact, for any internal communications, should be the same as for external communications, should be given the same sort of quality level, not a simple email, but something that's constructed in HTML. Another point I would like to make is it's the newsletter should be about the employee's voice. It should be, there's going to be, of course, information from senior management, but so there should also be content from bottom up, not just top down. And in that way, the newsletter editor, the person who's constructing that newsletter, should think of their role as a content curator, taking other people's bits of work, not a content creator. And therefore, that editor of the newsletter needs sources, needs to build relationships with staff, not just senior staff, but those across the organisation. I would also suggest that things like tone are important, things like the content type, and that will vary according to the organisation. You know, a legal firm may well have a quite formal tone in its newsletters, whereas Innocent Drinks will probably have a quite informal tone to its newsletters. That's what expected. That's what works well with their particular audience, their employees.
Is the use of tone one of the ways that you can influence people? So you're setting up expectations of the way you expect them to behave or your think, feel, do by using the tone of your communications?
That's a good question. I'm not sure I would, because that would infer that you might have a different tone at different times. And I think it's better to have a consistent tone that's really part of the branding of the organisation, the style of the organisation fits that, rather than, you know, we're not doing very well at the moment on performance, therefore, and that kind of very serious tone when something's not going quite right, as opposed to some weeks later, yeah, we did it, we really did well. I think it needs to be more of a consistent tone. And tone to me fits within the branding side. I think the content and the type of content is, though, important to consider.
Okay, so you've mentioned content a couple of times, so let's come back to content. So you've suggested that it's less thinking about internal communications creation and more curation. So presumably that's twofold. One, you need people to give you information so that you can curate it. And the other one is thinking about, with any communications, thinking about your audience and what they want to hear.
Yes, and how they want to hear it. So embedded video in a newsletter works really well. Short video within the newsletter. An organization that's a FTSE 100 company, which has some of our PR apprentices, they've looked at the different, they've done the measurement and looked at different parts of a newsletter and found that video is consistently the most opened, most watched part of a newsletter, short video. It works well. And that would bear out in research that we are, in external communications, much more interested in watching a short video rather than reading something and having to scroll on a page. Human interest stories are often the most read parts of a newsletter. Some years ago, when I worked in the Foreign Office, we had a magazine, Internal Communications magazine, and Day in the Life was the last page of the magazine. And we found out in research that that was the most liked part of the magazine, not the information about a new foreign policy or message from the foreign minister, but Day in the Life, someone somewhere working at a British embassy or consulate somewhere in the world, talking about their day, human interest stories. And then, you know, how one sets out that newsletter so that it is appealing. It does give the incentive to people, yeah, I want to have a look at that. So using thumbnail images with then just a very short sentence or two that someone would click through to read that story in greater detail. So not something that's terribly long as a newsletter, but having click-throughs on it. What we often call authentic communications. With the public relations apprentices, we had a really interesting discussion recently as a group discussion about what is authentic communications. And we came up with a definition. It means being open, honest, and thoughtful in what you say and in what you listen and how you respond to what you hear. And I think that's, you know, it's how you build that into a newsletter, perhaps not the easiest, but making things open, honest, thoughtful. And so it's authentic communications. I mentioned just now about measurement, and I think that's an important part. We've been talking at various points as well about opening rates and click-through rates. Data metrics that most newsletter programs will supply you with. But you can go beyond that. One organization I know has software that will measure the scrolling speed of the employee as they go through the newsletter. And that's really taking skip to its ultimate length, that they can tell of when someone's looking at the newsletter, which parts of it were speed read, which parts of it were skipped, which parts of it were read, based on that person's scrolling speed through it. But it doesn't have to be such sophisticated software to do that. It's good to to have a survey or to seek feedback on the user letter? Is it providing the sort of information that the employee would like to hear, would find useful for them to do their work, for them to feel part of the organisation? What type of content works best for them?
Okay, so there's an awful lot in there to look at, but I can see that some form of measurement. I must admit, measuring someone's scrolling speed just feels a little bit too big brother to me. But I can see that you do need feedback. You do need to make certain that it's relevant. What about? There are going to be times when there is perhaps a management requirement that certain messages have to get to employees, which may not be messages employees find particularly interesting. Your message from the foreign secretary, I thought, was quite an interesting one. Maybe that was something the foreign secretary needed the Foreign Office people to know. So how do you get around that?
Yeah, it's very true. Of course, there's going to be a need for, we talked earlier about, you know, messages from the top down to employees to help them understand what's going on, to inform them, if you like, perhaps even to influence them, and not just a sort of a social media about what employees around the world are doing or whatever it may be. But I think it's how that is packaged and thinking about the language. I know of a few people who work in internal communications who rewrite what the senior management person has given them, take out the management speak in it so that it's in nice, plain, clear language that the majority or the staff would understand. I think that's another role of the curation is making sure that it is understandable, that it is relevant to all employees. How does one package that? Could in fact it be instead of a piece written by the chief executive, could they do a short 2-minute video where they explain, so it's got more of a human interest side to it? There is the person actually talking about that new policy or whatever it is, may well get people to actually listen to it. It's cutting through the noise of other things going on to get that message across.
Yes, that makes sense. I love the tip about making certain that you take out any management speak, because I think anyone in management does very quickly get into the idea that everybody else talks the same way that we do, which, of course, they don't. That's great. Any other top tips when doing internal comms?
I think it goes a little bit back to where we started this and think about what internal communications, how does one do effective internal communications? And it's not just relaying messages from senior management or human resources or another part. It's very much involving employees. How can one do that? It's likely to be more effective when it actually involves, in one way or another, the employee. It's about the employees and not just messages down from the top. That balance between top down and bottom up, I think, makes for effective communication. Involves both listening and responding, as well as providing that information.
Alan Anstead, thank you very much indeed for giving us that insight into internal communications, introducing me to the think, feel, do model, and also explaining the skipping the skip. Thank you very much indeed, Alan.
Thank you, Kieran.
The Cambridge Marketing Podcast from Cambridge Marketing College, training marketing and PR professionals across the globe.